Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
Every second, we're borrowing about $70,000. Do you not think the retired couple, the foreign government, the big business, the rich person who are buying U.S. savings bonds, are you pretending they don't actually sort of care about what we do here and that we're going to make sure they get their money back? Or is it just all magic money?
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
But understand what that 6%, and this is sort of the punchline of what I'm trying to communicate here. By 2034, that's 9 budget years from now, debt servicing at 6%, so back even below the historic average, rates would consume 45% of all tax receipts. Let's do that again. Imagine a world where 45% of all tax receipts that come into the government just are paying interest.
This is Agriculture Today.
Mr. Chair, if throwing money at a problem would fix it, we wouldn't be having fires today.
The only forester in Congress is chairman of the Natural Resources Committee from Arkansas, Bruce Westerman.
Over the past few years, our federal land managers have been showered with $12 billion to battle wildland fire and to make our forests more resilient. The result of that is the Forest Service estimates they're going to treat less acreage than they've treated before. It's not a money problem, it's a policy problem, and Fix Our Forest will help solve that problem.
The House debating Fix Our Forest Act on Thursday. California Republican Doug LaMalfa.
The area I represent in far northern California is one that has seen so much fire and so much destruction over the years. The Fix Our Forest Act is an important step, a meaningful step, in having this not occur anymore. And so I'm really pleased that the effort can be bipartisan and Chairman Westerman is able to advance this cause. Indeed, this is what one of my cities looked like, Paradise, California. It's already been 6 years, 85 lives lost, 3 other towns affected in my district. 2 of them almost completely gone, Greenville, Canyon Dam. A third one called Doyle burnt right through that as well. We're getting tired of this. We're getting really tired of it. Now, with the tragedy in Southern California, I guess that puts an underline since it's getting a lot more national press. Unfortunate. What I'm appreciating in this bill is its common sense will help these disasters and keep our power grid more reliable with legislation to have more clearing around the power lines. A bill that I was able to pass a while back that we're adding to in this bill. Also, I'm pleased to have this a provision in here that advances more grazing. Of course, grazing is a very cost-effective way of keeping the fuels down around fire zones, and you can get actually paid for it by those doing the grazing. So when you see what success looks like, this is a managed forest here. It's thinned out and has a much better opportunity to put fire out and stop fire, or at least have it burn through slowly and much more cooler. When you don't manage the land, such as so much U.S. Forest Service land looks this way, this is a tinderbox. It will burn completely down. You may not see any growth for 50 years after that. So let's go with success, what Mr. McClintock was talking about in the Tahoe area, and even in a small town near Paradise called Magalia, where a private concern had done some of the work, and half of Magalia did not burn because of the work that was done adjacent to it. We know these processes work.
California Democrat Jared Huffman.
The picture my friend from Northern California just showed is instructive because both the left and the right side of that picture are areas that were clear-cut. You can tell that because all the trees are exactly the same height. It's what we call a plantation forest. It's unhealthy. It is absolutely vulnerable to wildfire. I'm glad that they did some thinning on the left side of that picture. But the unhealthy forest on the right side is also a vestige of clear cutting, which does not make anyone safer. It actually makes communities a lot more vulnerable to wildfire. And it's exactly the kind of project that would go through the huge loophole created in this legislation. More clear cutting is not going to make us any safer from the wildfire risk.
And Westerman was quick to reply.
Mr. Chair, as a forester, I can tell you that the only clear cuts that are happening on federal lands right now are wildfires. That is nature's way of clear cutting. So when we see these devastating wildfires that burn everything off of the landscape, that is a clear cut. What Mr. LaMalfa was talking about was uneven age forest management and thinning, which we know works.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
I had been in office serving Governor Rick Perry for 2+ years when I received a call.
Rick Rollins is the nominee for Ag Secretary on Thursday before the Senate Ag Committee.
A small think tank of 2 or 3 staffers in San Antonio asked if I would be interested in being their new leader. And I answered that call as well, thinking as that my husband and I built our family, that that would be helpful and a good potential opportunity to be a great mom, but also continue the fight for Texas. At TPPF, over the next 15 years, we fundamentally redefined the mission of a think tank from just having ideas or writing about them in white papers to actually effectually changing policy for the people of our state. We engaged strongly during those 15 years with Texas rural and small town communities, giving them a voice in government that was too often denied. In short, we changed the game in Texas. Changing the game is exactly why I accepted the invitation to join President Trump's first administration at the beginning of 2018. Everything that we had sought to do in Texas those last decades to make policy for real change for real Texans was being done. I joined first to the White House Office of American Innovation as its leader. I then soon became the assistant to the president in addition on strategic initiatives and eventually added the role of the director of the Domestic Policy Council. Thanks to President Trump and to all of you, I hope to have the opportunity to bring that level of passion and commitment to the USDA. I need not tell you, of all people, that this is surpassingly important to us as a nation. All Americans are important, but the farmer, the worker of the land who feeds all the others, is amongst the most notable. Thomas Jefferson wrote that agriculture is our wisest pursuit, because it will, in the end, contribute most to real wealth, good morals, and happiness. And his wisdom holds true today. I fully recognize that if I am confirmed, I am stepping into the role during one of the most economically challenging times in American agriculture history. With that in mind, I want to share with you, as I close, my top priorities for day one, and then perhaps a longer-term priority. First, we must ensure that the disaster and economic assistance authorized by Congress is deployed as quickly and as efficiently as possible. Second, we must work with the great men and women of USDA, the stakeholder communities, and state leaders, my deep background in state policy, to immediately and comprehensively get a handle on the state of animal disease outbreaks. Third, we must immediately begin to modernize, realign, rethink the United States Department of Agriculture, responding to the clear needs and the desires of the American people as set forth so well by the President of the United States over this last historic week. And finally, and longer term, we understand that serving all American agriculture and all the American people means ensuring that our rural communities are equipped and supported to prosper, not just today, but tomorrow and the day after that and the many tomorrows to come. This includes exploring improvements to our rural development programs, demanding strong and steady domestic and export markets for our beautiful agriculture bounty, eliminating burdensome and costly regulations that hamper innovation, ensuring our nutrition programs are effective and efficient, and putting in the work to make sure we have a healthy and prepared next generation of farmers, ranchers, entrepreneurs, innovators, and indeed all Americans. This is what we need for the next century of American greatness.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Senator Grassley, I enjoyed visiting you in your office and will remind you that when we were talking about the American agriculture, that I may be the first Treasury Secretary nominee in a long time who knows what a section is and am involved in the farming business.
Nominee for Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
We do not have a revenue problem in the United States of America. We have a spending problem. That historically, for the past 40 or 50 years, revenues, federal government revenues, have averaged about 17 to 17.5% of GDP. Yeah. And spending has been slightly over that, leading us to a 3.5% budget deficit, which is manageable because we have roughly 3.8% nominal growth, 1.8% real growth, 2% inflation. Today, as you stated, and To be clear, this is one of the things that got me out from behind my desk and my quiet life in this campaign, was the thought that this spending is out of control. We are spending about 24, 25% of GDP. So as you said, 6.8 to 7% deficit. We have never seen this before when it is not a recession or not a war. And I am concerned because several times the Treasury of the United States has been called upon to save the nation, whether it was the Civil War, the Great Depression, World War II, or the recent COVID epidemic. Treasury, along with full government and Congress, has used its borrowing capacity to save the Union, to save the world, and to save the American people. And what we currently have now, we would be hard-pressed to do the same.
Besant taking a question from Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy.
By the way, I also, Lindsey Graham alluded to it, going back to tariffs, which Senator Wyden spoke of, I've been very concerned that countries like China manipulate environmental regulations. You point out that they're building 100 coal-fired plants over a period of time, and that whatever we do will not have an impact on global greenhouse gas emissions because China's putting up so many. I believe I've learned that that is called an externality in economics. When we met, we discussed the foreign pollution fee, which would put a levy, a tariff, on those carbon-intensive products coming from countries like China, roughly commensurate with their avoided cost of not controlling it. Now, I would think that my Democratic colleagues would like that, because that's clearly a way that they are manipulating the world economy to steal jobs from the United States and simultaneously increase global greenhouse gas emissions. Any comments on such a foreign pollution fee?
Senator Cassidy, this is a very good question, because, and I believe it is one for your Democratic colleagues to understand whether they would be in favor of the equivalent of a carbon tariff, that Senator Graham is in favor of it. And I think this is a very interesting idea that it could be part of a entire tariff program, because I think President Trump hasn't taken office yet. But if confirmed, I look forward to working with them on various strategies, some that could be specifically aimed toward carbon, as you say, others that could be aimed toward unfair trade practices, unfair financing practices.
So if you will, there's externalities that a tariff can address. Those externalities in and of themselves hurt the pocketbook or the job prospects of an average American.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
I think the first 100 days, sir, if I am so fortunate to be confirmed, will be a fast and furious effort to ensure that we move that economic aid out.
Before the Senate Ag Committee on Thursday, Ag Secretary nominee Brooke Rollins.
In fact, when I got the call from the president about this particular position, it was the honor of a lifetime to accept that call and to accept the nomination. But then about 5 minutes later, I started thinking about, okay, what do I do to make this successful and perhaps the best, most effective, efficient United States Department of Agriculture in history since President Lincoln first launched this department? The aid to the farmers, top priority. Animal disease, top priority. Ensuring that we begin to move toward President Trump's vision. I work for him. I am his cabinet member, but also working alongside all of you. And so many of the conversations that we all had over the last 4 to 6 weeks from both sides of the aisle, from both Republicans and Democrats, were very encouraging to me. I believe that there is an opportunity. While there will be moments of disagreement, I have no doubt that there will also be many, many moments of agreement. So, Chairman Bozeman, my thought is that we get in there, and anyone that knows me and that has worked with me over the course of all these years know that excellence is the not only the goal but the expectation, that we move with rapid speed to ensure it gets done, that we work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for our constituents, which is this country and that community is thriving in a way perhaps they never have before because of the work and the foresight and the goals and the vision that I think is so important.
on the issue of ag trade.
In the last few years, we have almost a $45 billion trade deficit for our ag products. So a key priority will be expanding access to these markets across the country. We've already been sort of vision boarding, not to get ahead of the process, but I want to make sure I'm able to hit the ground running. How it is we begin to immediately effectuate bringing down that $45 billion trade deficit, and just it's just up 42% in the last year. There is a deep recognition that corn prices are down 35% just in the last year as well, hurting. Regarding the president's tariff agenda, I think it probably comes as no surprise to anyone sitting in this room that he believes it is a very important tool in his toolkit to continue or bring America back to the forefront of the world and to ensure that we have a thriving economy. But just as he did and we did in the first administration, he also understands the potential devastating impact to our farmers and our ranchers. And during that time, I have spoken with Secretary Perdue a few times on how that was managed into that team, so I fully understand, and that we are prepared to execute something similar if approved, if confirmed, but also working with the White House to ensure that we can close those holes for our farmers and ranchers moving forward under any sort of tariff execution in the next coming days, in the next few years. And that will be a top priority of mine.
On California's Prop 12.
You know, the idea that one state, and listen, I'm a federalism believer. I believe in the founders' vision of the 10th Amendment, and the government closest to the people is the government that should be most active and under that 10th Amendment. But this particular issue, I believe from even a bipartisan perspective, there's no doubt that it's not just affecting California. It's affecting multitudes of other states, multitudes of other parts of the ag community, including our hog family farms, Iowa, but many other states have been really affected by this as well. I know that you guys, if you don't even already have a bill filed, you're soon to file one. Yes. Legislation has been drafted. So, yes, I commit to working with you on that and look forward to it.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
What we're doing is not working.
The only forester in Congress, Arkansas Representative Bruce Westerman, chairman of the Natural Resources Committee.
First, let's talk about the stakes. The Los Angeles wildfires have caused unimaginable damage and will likely become the costliest in American history, with early estimates suggesting upwards of $250 billion in damages. More than 16,000 structures, homes, schools, grocery stores, entire neighborhoods and communities have burned. And sadly, at least 28 people have tragically lost their lives. But we know, and we all know, that such figures can only tell part of the story. No price tag can be placed on the loss of a beloved family member or friend. No property valuation can register the pain a family feels after losing a home where cherished memories were made. No bookkeeping accounts for the lost dreams of a small business owner whose life work has gone up in smoke. These are the true cost, the human cost of catastrophic wildfire. Losing 16,000 structures is nearly unfathomable. Local officials reported that it looked like a bomb was dropped on these communities after the smoke had cleared. But what's truly startling is that there are 44 million homes in the wildland urban interface nationwide, more than 70,000 communities, just like Pacific Palisades, at risk of being wiped out by catastrophic fire.
Westerman introducing the Fix Our Forest Act.
What we've been doing is not working. This bill passed the House last September with a strong bipartisan vote. Unfortunately, the Senate failed to move it. In the interim, more than 1.5 million more acres burned across the country. The Fix Our Forest Act offers a broad set of common sense solutions that must be enacted. This legislation creates a needed framework for prioritizing treatments in our highest risk areas. To identify these areas, FOFA utilizes state-of-the-art technology to determine the most vulnerable fire sheds across the country. Then it incentivizes the use of emergency actions to prevent wildfires. Many of these actions, like clearing brush and creating fuel breaks, are exactly what local authorities hastily undertook as they scrambled to save threatened neighborhoods in Los Angeles. The key difference, however, is that this bill ensures that such measures take place well before the fires start, not in the heat of an approaching blaze. Without these tools, completing a single forest management project takes an average of 3 to 5 years. Under FOFA, land managers can act immediately to protect communities.
The acronym for Fix Our Forest Act, FOFA.
FOFA also expands existing categorical exclusions up to 10,000 acres so that prevention measures can meet the scale of the crisis. Under the status quo, if land managers want to reduce hazardous fuels in an area roughly the size of the Palisades fire, they would need 8 separate categorical exclusions. Under FOFA, they would only need 2. This change is based on proven results like the 10,000-acre CE in the Tahoe Basin. That was a bipartisan effort by Representative McClintock and the late Senator Dianne Feinstein. These efforts saved South Lake Tahoe from certain destruction during the Caldor fire. FOFA also protects communities by creating a community wildfire risk reduction program and clearing hazardous trees from utility rights of way to prevent fires like the ones that destroyed Lahaina in Maui and Paradise in California.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
All that's going to fall in your empire is astronomical. That's all there is to it.
At her confirmation hearing to be the next Secretary of Agriculture, Brooke Rollins in front of the Senate Ag Committee, and new member from West Virginia, Jim Justice.
You know, I am amazed with President Trump's nominees, and that's all there is to it. They're qualified. They're absolutely experienced. They absolutely have what Brooke has. She's stuck on. Anybody that can't see that is... Absolutely not. She approaches it with positiveness and a big smile. And so all of you that came, especially all of her family, you know, I am not amazed in any way. I know she's infectious around every last one of you. Mm-hmm. And let me just tell you just this. And this is my view. The American family farm has got to be protected like none other. Right today, right now, you know, what we have is the average size of the American family farm is 450 plus or minus acres. Now, you just think about it. What are they doing right now? What are they doing right now? You know, maybe in Wyoming, it may very well be 30 below zero, and they're out on a snowmobile or a horse trying to feed their cattle. And maybe if they were a dairyman wherever or lady wherever it may be, there's never a day off. Never a day off. The cows have to be milked. There is never a day off. And whether it be maybe just that little farm that's sitting trying to figure out how in the world, with fertilizer prices or whatever it may be, how in the world can we make ends come out or ends work? And just think about this. They're probably driving a 12-year-old pickup truck. They're trying every way they possibly can, and every year they're in a Texas Hold'em game where they shove everything all in, every single year. Now, with all that being said, just think about it. What happens if we lose our American small farm? What happens to where do we go? You know, corporate interests and on and on and on. They're a productive engine like you can't imagine on the planet. You can never imagine their productivity. They're a treasure to every single last one of us. And we best better protect them and keep them on that farm. You know, they can cash out today with their land, most all, and have a lifestyle that is so much better than their earnings every single year. And why do they do it? They do it because of one thing. They love what they do. And we got to keep them there. And we got to protect them in every single way. I know it in my heart. And I believe it with all my soul. You know, if you'll just step back and look, the grocery store's a mile long. Food beyond belief. Now, I know we've had an increase in food prices, and we need to do something about that if we possibly can. But with all that, we enjoy a luxury that is off the chart. What we throw away, many, many around the world would beg to have what we throw away. It's a luxury beyond belief. And that small farm that I'm talking about provides us that luxury.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
Chinese economy is the most imbalanced, unbalanced economy in the history of the world. They are using their surpluses to fund their military machine in China. And I'm not going to try the Mandarin pronunciation for the sake of everyone in the room. But there is a phrase that is two words, military industrial. And military always comes first. So we should understand that.
Nominee for Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent.
We should have a very rigorous screening process for, as you identified, anything that could be used in AI, in quantum computing, in surveillance, in chips, that the U.S. has the lead, and we must make sure that we maintain it through smart policies such as you and I discussed.